Well, I'm running for governor for a number of reasons. One is a group came to me and expressed concern about the fact that we don't have a fiscal plan. I haven't had one. We've been in a deficit for 10 years. During my term as well, we presented a fiscal plan. It was not adopted. So they're concerned about the fiscal plan. They're concerned about the lack of vision, the lack of any plan of where we're going. They're concerned about the infrastructure money that's going to come. We don't seem to be very interested in competing for it with this administration, with this governor. And so I'm all about the fiscal issue. I mean, if you don't have a fiscal plan, I worry about education funding. I worry about Marine Highway System funding. So we need a fiscal plan.
Yeah. So and then beyond the fiscal plan, what do you see as some of the other most important issues?
Well, I mean, certainly affordable housing. That's a big issue that I've heard as I traveled the state and gone to lots of communities. One thing in common I've heard is we need affordable housing. It's out of reach now, and we're losing population. We can't fill positions because we have no place for them to live. So that's a very, very common theme. The other thing I'm hearing a lot is child care. So if you don't have child care, you don't have affordable housing, it's hard to fill these positions. So It's a statewide issue, and it's one that we will address that aggressively.
Absolutely, yeah. And what sort of steps would you have the state take to quickly address the affordable housing crisis?
Well, a couple of things. One is find out is there land available for subdivisions. You know, I look at the infrastructure of money coming to Alaska. Is there a way that can be used to do some of the subdivision development so the cost of the lots are less? The cost of the developing of a subdivision. My background is building. I'm a house builder from years past, long before law school, and actually since law school. Last house I built was our own house that we live in. So it's about, you know, how do we reduce the cost of creating new housing in each community.
Got it. Yeah. We talked a little bit about this before I turned the mics on, but tell me a little bit about your time in Ketchikan, who you're meeting with, what you're hearing from folks.
You know, Ketchikan is very inspirational for me. I remember the first time I came here, I actually started my first campaign event or speech was here in Ketchikan at the Chamber of Commerce, and Governor Hickel had encouraged me to run and said, "You've got to go to Ketchikan. There's something special about Ketchikan." So while I'm talking to the Chamber of Commerce, my phone rang. I looked down. It was Governor Hickel. And in hindsight, I wish I had answered the call, put him on speakerphone for him to be part of that. He's right about Ketchikan. We have been, you know, went to the Chamber of Commerce today just as a, you know, not as a presenter, just to listen to hear what's happening. We spent time with each of the respective mayors to hear the issues associated with the borough and with the city and what they're doing there. We went out to Saxman. I particularly enjoyed talking to a group of students at the high school today. Most of them were seniors. I was there to listen to them about what they're looking at doing, and I was very impressed with their each one. As we went around the room, they knew where they're going. They knew what they're going to do. I mean, they were focused, very focused students, and so it was exciting to be part of that. And it's been a full couple of days. We had a campaign event last night. And so it was, it was a lot of things happening for us in Ketchikan.
Yeah. And so how would you use state resources to combat climate change? And that's one thing that you outline on your policy platform online.
Right. You know, when we were in office, we put together about a 25-member climate change leadership action committee, and the operative word was action. I'm not a big fan of studying things. Sometimes if you don't really do something, you form a work group and study something, and there's nothing much to study. Now we need action. So we put that on our website as far as the action plan that they came up with. It was made up of a young whaling captain from Point Hope to, you know, president of one of BP Alaska. So we had quite a cross section of folks on that committee. So it's a matter of, I mean, we're kind of in an interesting spot. We're a resource state. We are a hydrocarbon resource state. It was 90% of our revenue came from that. Now it's 30% as a result of some legislation that we passed when we were in office. But still a large part of our economy. So how do we balance that with, you know, what's happening elsewhere in the world? So, you know, I've been a big proponent of natural gas, obviously. Natural gas is half of the hydrocarbon output is oil. And so I think we need to be looking at that. I look at our Marine Highway System, Prince Rupert, and also British Columbia, all British Columbia, their marine highway system is all on liquefied natural gas. Tote Shipping, their ship is on liquefied natural gas. So that's one step we can do that would have a significant effect.
Yeah. You mentioned Alaska as a resource state. I mean, do you see carbon credits or offsets playing a role in the state's future economy, as a resource state?
Yeah, I do. In fact, that's playing a role now. There are carbon credits being sold and bought and swapped in Alaska because of the vastness of our resource. When I was fortunate enough to be a fellow at Harvard after I was out of office, and my chief of staff was Kira O'Brien. I'm sorry, Kira O'Brien, and she did a great job. And her passion was on the carbon credits, and she did a lot of good work at Harvard on that. So I was really fortunate to have her as a chief of staff, and really learn from her about what she's doing on the carbon credit side. So I did an opinion piece about that, as far as the benefits of carbon credit program and how we could actually shine. It's a concept whereby those that do it better get rewarded than those that don't, as far as a smaller carbon footprint and sort of do some of the things we already do in our resource development, other places don't. So it would value our resource at a higher value because of that. So, yeah, she was a big part of that.
Yeah. So you mentioned additional natural gas as part of a plan to address climate change. I mean, do you think it's time to, do you think that's, appropriate given that we're, sort of moving closer to a time when we need to be off carbon entirely?
Yeah. Most see that natural gas is a transition fuel, and that, we won't be off entirely. We will eventually, and that's certainly a goal. But until then, there's a transition. As our throughput of oil is down to 25% of what it used to be, it's time to transition over on the natural gas side. The world is recognizing and embracing natural gas as a transition fuel, and here we are still on oil, still burning green wood. We need to transition to the natural gas.
Given that you see it as a transition fuel, do you think it's appropriate for the state to invest large amounts of resources into it, in terms of infrastructure?
Yeah, I don't think the state needs to invest in infrastructure on that. I think the market will. We had 15 letters of intent from the market interested in gas when we left office. The current governor chose to let those lapse for whatever reason. He didn't like the project. He was vocal about that, didn't think it was a good project. Now the world is scrambling for exactly what we have. So it's time to take a look at that again. I don't know if we can get them back. Once you send the market away, as he did, it's questionable whether they come back. They went away. They went away to other projects. They went away to U.S. Gulf Coast, Louisiana, and Texas. They're very happy with those states. Very happy with what he did because they got that business. We didn't. So whether we can reengage with that, I'm not sure, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah. And excuse me, I'm not entirely familiar with this, but I wanted to ask you about it anyway. Where you stand on the Alaska gas line from, the North Slope down to...
Well, I guess that's what I've been talking about a bit. Governor Hammond and Governor Hickel and Governor Egan actually started that shortly after the oil pipeline was completed. I had a role, as every governor had a role in it. My role was to really was engaged with the market. I mean, the biggest part you need for a gas line is, do we have the gas? We reinject more gas than they consume in Oregon, Washington, California combined. Plenty of gas. Now the market. And so that's what we did, is we engaged with the market. I met with President Moon, President of Korea, Prime Minister of Japan. There were meetings with the President of Vietnam, and I had meetings with the President of China. And so President Trump was involved in that. He engaged and encouraged President Xi to come to Alaska. He did, and we met with him. So my piece of it was the market piece. We don't have to go look for the gas. We don't have to drill any single wells. We have to just stop paying to put it back in the ground and then bring it to Alaskans and onto the market. At that time, it showed to bring about $1 billion a year into the state revenues, and the state itself, and then the state in general was several billion dollars a year. And the nice thing is that we could finally have cheap energy in Alaska. We're the most energy-rich state in the nation. And we have the highest cost energy, and we just need to get it to Alaskans.
No.
But you can't do that. There's just not enough of us, 730,000 people. We need a market for that in order to get, for us to have it economically. If we just bring it to us, it would be way more expensive. We need the economy of scale associated with a larger population.
So we've seen the Biden administration sort of transition away, signal a transition away from old growth logging, especially important here in Southeast, especially here in the southern half of the Panhandle where a lot of it takes place. And I'm curious where you stand on that. I'm curious whether you think that, state operators like, I understand the Alaska Mental Health Trust is not entirely, it sort of governs itself in a way. But I'm curious if you think there are ways to encourage sort of state entities to move towards second growth logging or move away from old growth logging in general.
You know, we have to look at our resources as our opportunity as far as for economic development, for jobs and those kinds of things. You know, my approach is a bit different than other governors, certainly this governor. My approach is to argue our case in the Oval Office. And I don't care. I'm an independent. I'm nonpartisan. I'm just a lifelong Alaskan. I'm not drawn to one party or the other necessarily. I was a Republican. I moved as an independent. My running mate, Heidi Dragas, was a Democrat. She's moved as an independent as well. So we're the unity ticket. And actually, she has some pretty deep roots in Ketchikan. Her husband, who she met in Juneau, Kevin Sund, is from Ketchikan. And of course, a number of relatives here. And her dad, her father-in-law, served in the legislature representing Ketchikan, some time ago. So we look at, and they have a place on Prince of Wales. We just came back from Prince of Wales last weekend. We're there for a wedding. Barbara Blake got married. It was phenomenal. Three wonderful days in Prince of Wales. So we have to use our resources. I'm a philosophy of again, make our case, in the Oval Office or on Air Force One or where we need to do it. The last tool I reach for, and though I'm a 40-year attorney, the last thing I do is file the lawsuit. If it's needed, I'll certainly do it. But if you start with that as the first tool, it sort of makes it a little more challenging to sit down and have that conversation. And my goal as governor was to help educate Secretary Sally Jewell about the needs in Alaska on resource development and how we do it differently, how we do it more carefully, what the part it is for our economy. We didn't agree on very much, but we did build a relationship, and that's really critical. And so I would do the same with his administration, to sit down with Secretary of Interior, sit down with the president, and help educate them on our state.
And just to be clear, would the goal be to sort of expand access to resources like old growth timber?
There's some controversy back and forth on the roadless rule, and I think there's some middle ground on that, and I think that what I want to focus on what realistically we can get done, because there's been some ongoing fights that can continue on as far as in that direction, but also what can we do? And I know there's a Southeast Sustainable Plan that I've seen that is being put forth of what kind of industries, what kind of development can we do in the Tongass to create the jobs and the activities and the economy, and stepping aside from the old growth fight. Maybe that fight continues on, but while that continues on, let's find out what it is we can agree on with the administration and move forward.
Got it. So reproductive rights have been in the news a lot lately. I'm curious if you could tell listeners sort of where you stand on reproductive freedom in Alaska.
Well, Heidi and I view that a bit differently. I've been pro-life for my life, most of my life, and Heidi is pro-choice, and there's nothing wrong with with that. I don't denigrate anybody or challenge anybody that has a different belief than I do. But when I take an oath of office, as I did, my oath is to uphold and defend the Constitution, and regardless of my personal beliefs. So I will do that, as I did before. Our Constitution, Article 1, Section 22, is very clear that under right to privacy, that is a woman's choice on reproductive health is their choice, and it'll stay that way. We aren't going to fight that. We have nothing to fight. The Constitution is clear. We're probably one of the few states that when Roe v. Wade, if in fact that is changed, that Alaska has that protection built into the Constitution. I am not in favor of a constitutional convention for a lot of reasons. I think the last thing we need right now in the upheaval we have, the partisan divisiveness, is to have a constitutional convention. I think that would be wrong. So I'm not in favor of that. So under the Walker-Dreyfus administration, nothing changes in that area. I'm not going to approve bills that try to change that, because of, you know, the Constitution is paramount, and you can't have a piece of legislation contrary to that. So I would veto legislation, any efforts to change it, that, because you can't change a Constitution by legislation. So status quo. You know, I'm not running for governor on the social issues. I'm running for governor on the economy, on the fiscal plan that we need, and you know, some of these issues that we need to resolve so our economy can grow.
Yeah. And I did want to get back to the fiscal plan a little bit. Can you sort of just give a broad outline of what a sustainable fiscal plan for Alaska might look like?
Well, it's a couple things. You know, one is that we've got to look at how we spend our money, as far as not so much on the budget cut. I mean, when I was in office, we had $26 oil. We reduced the budget by 15%. We reduced spending by about 40% before there was any adjustment to the permanent fund dividend. So I think we're done with that part of it. It was a painful process to do that, and the current governor came in he was going to slash the budget, and the budget now is actually more than what my budget was. So the budget has grown a bit. And so it's not about battling over what more we can cut and how many more people we can lay off. So the big ticket items we need to look at, certainly we need to look at the way we subsidize some of the industries in the state. I've long felt that when we were in office, we did eliminate the tax credit program on the exploration side. We couldn't afford that anymore, and so it was eliminated, and we were paying the payment every year, the minimum payment on that. That needs to be paid off. On what we do up north, I think we need to look and take a hard look at the way we do business up north, as far as the per barrel credit that we provide. Boy, that's tough to deal with when we have an education system that the educators don't have a retirement system. So we need to look at our priorities again and make sure that what we were doing before it makes economic sense now. So that's where I would start with that. Certainly we need to, my philosophy is we have a permanent fund, probably the largest permanent fund per capita in the world, certainly the largest in the United States, no question about that, on a per capita basis, just the largest in volume in the lower 48. So we're at 80 billion roughly. We get to 100 billion and we take, you know, the structure draws we put in place when I was in office, legislatively was passed in number 26. That pretty much takes care of our budget. So it will be the first state in the union, the first state in the history of our country to be able to basically sustain ourselves into perpetuity with our sovereign wealth as it continues to grow. We're almost there. And so my goal is to get it to $100 billion. And we can do that if we don't overdraw and we continue to let it build. Our plan, fiscal plan, was to put everything we had into the permanent fund, and that wasn't saleable at the time. The legislature chose not to do that, and that's certainly their choice. So it's a matter of growing the permanent fund. It's a matter of not subsidizing where we don't need to be subsidizing, quite honestly. It's a matter of you know, developing our resources so that we get, you know, an appropriate return for them as well, because we're the only state in the union that we actually own all the resources on the ground, and then we get a share of them as they're developed. But I want the jobs. I want the jobs. You know, in Prince of Wales, last week we toured the Sundance mine, and what a day that was. What an exciting day to see the way that mine is developed, the number of local residents, about 30, 35 jobs locally. They're all in the six-figure, you know, $150,000 range. They're all local folks, three on, two off. It was exciting to see that. And so we can do it that way. And we just need to make sure that we are standing up for Alaska and not the other way around.
And, you know, what do you see as a sustainable level for permanent fund dividends in particular? I mean, the current governor, I believe, has talked about, you know, sort of splitting the draw from the permanent fund 50-50 between state services and the PFD. I mean, what do you see as a plan for the PFD?
Well, it has to be sustainable. In other words, when I say sustainable, if we overdraw, then we're spending somebody else's money. And that's just, so it's got to be sustainable that allows the fund to continue to grow. When you start, you know, delving into the fund that we're reducing the size of the permanent fund in that for that reason, that's when we're going to get into the trouble. The concern I have is a larger, you know, the dividend needs to be as large as it possibly can be and still be sustainable going forward. So it's a longevity I'm concerned about of the fund, not necessarily the longevity of how long a person serves in office. It's the longevity of the fund. That's what's really, really important. So it's got to be sustainable going forward. It has to be something that's predictable, so we don't go through the process we're going through for the last several years as far as, you know, the debate and the training back and forth as far as, you know, in order to have one size of the fund and another. I mean, last session, Governor Dunleavy vetoed the entire dividend down to zero, and then the legislature came back in and added it back to what it was. So it's just got to be sustainable is the thing. It can't be. It's an important part of our financial fabric, no question, and it's one that we want to make sure it goes on for its transgenerational, not just for this period of time.
Do you see a 50-50 plan as sustainable?
You know, it's hard to say from the standpoint. It depends on what happens in the market. It depends on the size of the fund. I mean, there's a number of things that, so it's hard to kind of come up with a hard, I mean, it sounds good in theory, but in actuality, if it doesn't, if the numbers don't work, then we're going to end up imposing taxes, which I'd rather not do, in order to pay for a dividend. And so when we're imposing taxes on folks to pay a dividend, you have to start wondering if that's really the wisest use of our revenue. Yeah.
And one thing very important to folks here is the Alaska Marine Highway System you mentioned a little bit earlier. What would you